Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Marquitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show. And on this weekend show, we are going to be really looking ahead to that upcoming Fed meeting next week. I know all eyes are on the Fed, and I know we're all getting tired about talking about the Fed. But hey, there actually might be some changes to policy made in that next meeting, argument being maybe those changes are already priced in. That being said, we are also going to chat metals and markets as we always do. We're kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. You can also follow Mike on Twitter at RealMikeLarson. Now, Mike, let's start off big picture, because what we're seeing is U.S. equity markets, they've lost some of that momentum to the upside. That being said, we had the S&P and the Dow, I believe, that just recently touched some all-time highs. But again, there doesn't seem to be that bullishness or even complacency, I would say, within those markets. And on the flip side of things, when you look at commodities, those went through another pop this week. And precious metals, well, they are also moving higher, but they're kind of being outpaced by some of the other commodities. And then on the bond front, we've seen yields pull back a little bit. And that is in the face of all these bond bears out there. Mike, when you take a step back and look at all these moves for the markets, what catches your eye? What's most important?
Sure. I think, you know, we had some fears and concerns, kind of the typical stuff you see in September and early October, whether it was about China's Evergrande, whether it was about a potentially more aggressive Fed. You know, you mentioned what the Fed is likely to do. And it seems like people have pretty much settled in the idea at the November meeting, they're going to announce that, yes, we're finally going to start tapering. And then they'll probably start doing that, in fact, in December, and then, you know, rolling over into the first few months or maybe first half of next year. The markets kind of came to grips with that, priced that risk in, and then decided, well, this is still not going to be a super aggressive Fed. They're not going to really slam on the brakes. This is not 94, 95 all over again, or anything like that. So, you know, we can step back in and buy. Plus, the earnings outlook isn't really terrible. And even though we're not getting as much fiscal stimulus as maybe some people are hoping, we're also not seeing, you know, any of these ideas to, you know, tax the heck out of the economy passing or get it coming through either. So you roll it all together, and that's why we kind of see parts of the market where the broad average is at or testing new highs again. I think when you look at sort of, again, the interest rate outlook, we've seen, you know, a lot of the sort of, okay, inflation numbers stink. Let's be honest, they are very strong. But the bond market is reacting as if it's going to be, you know, met by some Fed hiking at the short end, nothing too aggressive, but a few hikes maybe. And that's going to basically revert the attention back to what we've been in longer term. And that is a generally deflationary economy or an aging population, too much debt piled on all levels of the economy. And really, this sort of the demographic and structural issues that we face leave us in a world where in the advanced economies, whether it's the U.S., whether it's Japan, Europe, and so on, I just can't hike rates all that much without breaking the economy, breaking, you know, or making it too expensive to service all this debt. And so Fed hiking cycles die out at lower levels with each successive iteration. So I think, you know, that's kind of what the bond market's looking at. We've seen the yield curve flatten quite a bit. Particularly this week when the Bank of Canada came out and said and suggested they may hike sooner than expected, dialing back their QE dramatically. That led to a big sharp move higher at the short end of the yield curve, but nowhere near anything like that at the long end. So the curve flattened dramatically in Canada's bond market. We saw it in the U.S. and also in Europe to some degree as well. And I think that's what we're going to be seeing going forward. So you roll it all together, it's a market environment where you're not going to see really aggressive monetary tightening, even as the Fed tries to normalize somewhat. And I don't think we're really looking at a recession or anything horrible like that in terms of what may happen with growth. So all of it together is a generally modestly bullish environment for stocks, by and large. And I think it's still very bullish for companies that pay dividends where you can, you know, get a better than bond market yield, especially where those dividends are growing. So, you know, that's been a favorite sector of mine for quite some time, and it still is. And I think that's ultimately how you want to position yourself in this market as an investor.
Well, Mike, you made some great points there setting the table. And it's interesting to think about if the market has already priced in the tapering for the most part, and they've digested that news, the Fed is still planning on doing the rate hikes next year. And as you mentioned, each Fed rate hiking cycle has ended earlier than expected and been successively lower. You mentioned the crushing debt amounts, which we've heard that, you know, narrative for some time. But do you think that the market is fully pricing in, the general markets and the bonds, that these hikes actually are going to happen and get anywhere close to inflation? Because with CPI readings near 5 and with the, you know, the 10-year about a point and a half, or, you know, 150 points at 1.5%, they can't really take it up to 5%, can they, or even 4% without there being some major market dislocations. So what do you think that we'll be navigating as we move through this November meeting with the market expectations on those hikes?
Sure. If you look at what the bond market, the futures market's pricing in, they have been pulling forward in the last few months the date of the first Fed hike into sort of mid to late 2022. And they have been increasing speculation about a couple of hikes versus maybe one, and then the others coming at 2023. So you've seen some pulling forward of the pricing of Fed moves. But interestingly, again, you haven't seen the long end of the curve freak out about that. You've seen 10-year yields that still haven't eclipsed their sort of March levels, and 30-year yields that are maybe 20, 30 basis points below those peaks and look to be rolling over. And as I mentioned, all those yield curve measures are flattening pretty dramatically. So what does that tell you? That tells you the bond market, the market overall's expectation is, yes, we're probably going to get more Fed action at the front end than we were thinking 6 months ago. But no, that doesn't get us, you know, everything that's happening in the economy now and the inflation outlook for the next year or two doesn't get us to a point where we have a 1970s style runaway inflation. It's more of after this, the fiscal impulse, when you think of all that fiscal stimulus starts to fade, which is kind of what it's looking like. You think of some of those things that were happening on the unemployment aid front and other infrastructure spending maybe not being as much as it was, you know, originally thought to be. All of those things, people are saying, okay, this fiscal spending is going to sort of fade. The COVID-related bottlenecks are going to fix themselves over the next, you know, couple of quarters. It's not going to be something where we have all these ships parked off the coast of, you know, Los Angeles or Long Beach for the next 5 years. And on top of that, you're going to have a Fed that, again, is trying to take some of that stimulus away at the front end. So the market is saying, sure, things look pretty bad now. The inflation numbers are high. They're, you know, real yields stink. But ultimately, some of those things that caused inflation to pick up are going to fade in the next year or two. The Fed's going to be forced to act. Therefore, it's not going to be this, again, 70s-style runaway thing. It doesn't mean the markets can't be ultimately wrong at some point, but that's what they're increasingly pricing in. And that's, I think, the message there. I think it's enough that, again, it's sort of a modestly bullish environment for equities and for things like precious metals. If the Fed's not going to be able to do all that much, which is my expectation, and if foreign central banks aren't going to be able to, you know, go on this sort of rate hiking rampage because of their own debt issues, then, you know, that does tend to support metals. And that does, I think, you're starting to see, along with the curve flattening, you're starting to see some, you know, gold mining shares firm up. I mean, they're not doing anything extraordinary, but we did recently see for a thing like GDX, you know, 2-3 month highs there, or flirting with those highs. We have seen, you know, some of the metals themselves stabilize here. I think that ultimately, if the markets realize and sort of appreciate this is not going to be, again, an aggressive Fed hiking cycle, then they can come to terms with a couple of hikes and maybe some dialing back of QE. And we can see that upside for gold and silver and miners that I think we're still looking at. Again, nothing that I've seen policy-wise has changed my opinion that we're in sort of the fifth, sixth inning of this move.
So, Mike, I do agree with you. It's going to be a slow process, right? And we actually don't know how the market's going to react to it. But all we can actually predict right now, or at least watch, is short-term moves when we get, again, some or at least a possible policy change in terms of winding down the QE program. Even this week, we saw the Bank of Canada on Wednesday come out and essentially stop their QE program. We saw a bounce in the Canadian dollar. We also saw a general rise in yields in Canada. What should we be watching for next week when the Fed, or if the Fed, does taper some QE?
I think any surprises, you know, are what we're all watching for. The consensus seems to be they'll make the decision to do it, but they probably won't actually start cutting, I think, until, or reducing the amount of bonds purchased until December or maybe January. You know, it's sort of, we've been through this long dragged out process, right? Where we're not even thinking about raising rates. And now it's well, okay, we're going to drop a bunch of hints in the media that we're, you know, thinking about maybe tapering, and then we're going to tell you we're going to taper, and then we're not actually going to do it until the next meeting. Again, I think what the markets are telling you is, as long as there's no surprises, we probably have, you know, we'll price in a little more front-end action. We'll have the back end of the yield curve basically get bought, because people will say, well, they're going to act against inflation now. It keeps it from getting really out of control later. Plus, we're going to lose that fiscal spending. Plus, we have a bunch of asset markets that can't handle higher rates. So, therefore, we're not going to get them. Because, again, this Fed is so hyper-focused on markets. Fiscal policy makers, they don't want to rock the boat on, you know, they may talk a big game about sort of populism and things like that. They want to, you know, come out with an economic plan that makes the Dow tank 10% on a given Monday. Of course not. Neither does the Fed, right? So I think that they're going to be in a situation where they are somewhat trapped longer term. The bond market's telling you that. And I think that's why, you know, I put out a few tweets I remember back in April, May timeframe, where it's kind of just, you know, thinking out loud, hey, maybe this is it for this curve move. Maybe unlike in past expansion cycles where, you know, you had maybe another 100 points of curve steepening coming, maybe this is it. And we're going to just sort of die out at a lower level than we have in the past. And that's been what's happened. So I think that at this point, I'm really not, don't see any reason to sort of change that way of thinking and continue to not be freaking out about a big backup in interest rates and not be freaking about the impact that might have on precious metals.
Well, Mike, it's an interesting environment where some traders have had really great runs in the general markets for about the last six quarters. And there's also some talk from the administration in the U.S., from the Biden administration, about raising the taxes on capital gains and even potentially taxing non-realized capital gains yet that are still on the paper. So do you think that there could be some pressure in the markets towards the end of this year for traders to pull their profits and pull on their horns a little bit and get more defensive and possibly rotate some funds over to some of those dividend stocks that you follow so closely? Or do you think that it's just a smooth ship sailing forward into the first and second quarter? What do you think?
You know, I think a lot of what's being thrown out there, it's a lot of sort of policy spaghetti being thrown at the wall to see what sticks, right? You know, one day it's, okay, we're going to have this billionaire's wealth tax. And then the next day, well, we can't do that. How about we figure out a way, you know, to tax those unearned or untaken gains? Okay, that doesn't work. Well, maybe now let's figure out a way to, you know, eliminate the step-up basis so people get taxed on, you know, the sort of death benefits that people get when the heirs inherit money from the previous generation. And on, you know, there's a lot of stuff being talked about, but, you know, there's been enough resistance that it kind of hasn't, you know, some of this stuff is probably going to get through, but it's going to be qualified. I don't think the most radical suggestions on the tax side, just like the most radical suggestions on the spending side, are going to happen. I mean, you know, the Democrats, despite having that Senate tie-breaking vote from the vice president, still, you know, the reality is even just a couple of slightly more conservative Democrats are really putting the screws to the radical wing, the progressive wing, and forcing them to compromise. So, you know, if something were to pass that is truly punishing for the markets, then, yeah, we're all going to wake up and have a bad week because we're going to sell off 6%. But, you know, the fact that it hasn't happened, the fact that a lot of this stuff is being kind of dialed back tells me that the general consensus is not as far on that progressive side of the policymaking sort of spectrum as I think maybe some were worried about. So, you know, I don't know that I would call it just smooth sailing and no worries and what have you there. But I do think, again, this sort of steady grind higher, unless there's a monetary shock, unless there's a true tax shock that comes through, is probably the best way to play it from an investor standpoint. And we'll kind of reevaluate after the new year and see where things stand, you know, later in the first quarter.
Yeah, that grind has really been the trend, hasn't it there, Mike? I want to get you out of here. And one other comment. When it comes to commodities, look, we've seen stuff like the base metals run to at least close to all-time highs or multi-year breakout levels. Energy on the oil front, natural gas, those have also been screaming higher. Oil's at somewhere around a seven-year high. And then the precious metals, those have also moved higher, but those are nowhere near their highs, really, at least when you compare it to some of the moves we've seen in base metals and energy. What's the balance here? Have you seen this environment before, and what do you take away from it?
You know, again, I think it goes back to just the concerns that we're entering a tightening cycle. You know, even I think that whenever people have seen that or seen the first hints of that, and you know, you look at where did this sort of long correction in gold and silver begin? What, about a year ago? What did that sort of coincide with? The initial kind of, okay, people are starting to get vaccinated. You know, the worst of this COVID thing does appear to gradually be turning, and plus markets were rallying so much that I think people started to realize the Fed's not going to be able to keep at this game forever. So what happened? You saw Treasury bond prices top out. You saw the dollar begin to bottom, and you saw gold and silver begin to, you know, enter this sort of long corrective phase. I think now, again, I think especially when you look at the yield curve, markets are starting to say, okay, maybe we overreacted. Maybe we were over worried that there's going to be some sharp snap, you know, sharp reaction to this. There's going to be some serious policy making aggression like we had in the past. And I just don't see that happening. So I think that's probably what you're starting to see now. I mean, base metals all along are benefiting from the economic environment, right? You're still having that COVID recovery, the demand recovery, and all of the economic recovery. So that's what's driving base. You know, what's been holding back precious has just been the concerns about how the policy response is going to be. But if those concerns are starting to ease, which I think is what we're starting to see, then, you know, maybe that pressure comes off and, you know, we're not necessarily off to the races, but we are ready to get back into resuming the general bull market in metals and precious.
Well, Mike, just one other sector we should touch on real quick before we wrap up, and that's the cryptocurrencies. They've had quite a crazy run lately, and some of that is being predicated on the comments coming out of JP Morgan and some other places that Bitcoin is a hedge against inflation. And with more of the market waking up to these high energy prices, higher wages, and higher inflation, do you think that that's the narrative that's going to stick for a while, or what do you make of the recent run in cryptos?
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, I listened to some great commentary at a recent conference, and it was sort of a gold bug type environment. And I think, you know, people were starting to realize and talk about, there were a few guests speaking about crypto, that we're saying, look, we're all on the same team, right? Your people who are investing in crypto, by and large, are generally trying to get their money out of a sort of a traditional banking system and into something that could potentially hold wealth, just like the traditional gold and silver buyers. So I think you're starting to see an appreciation that, hey, we can coexist, right? This doesn't have to be an either or situation. There are reasons to allocate money to precious metals, but also reasons to allocate money to crypto. And I think, you know, that's part of the sort of institutionalizing that we're starting to see in the cryptocurrency market. And then there's also, yes, there's a lot of shenanigans going on. There's a lot of just funny sort of play money YOLO type trading that people are doing in portions of the crypto market. But as it gets a little more mainstream, as it grows as an asset class, you're going to see, you know, you're going to see movement there that I think, an adoption there that I think is probably a good long-term trend to play as well.
Really is the fact that the crypto market does seem like it's here to stay, whether the gold bugs want to admit it or not. And the thing is, the crypto bulls have a lot of the same thoughts as the gold bulls too, but the gold bulls were really hating on crypto through the last couple of years. And now they're finally starting to accept that, look, we are similar. It's just different asset classes that people are looking at. And unfortunately, it's a younger audience that is in a bit more to cryptos. But overall, look, Mike, it seems like we're really just waiting for the turn of the calendar to 2022 and to see just how far central banks, especially the Fed, can go with the tightening and unwinding process. Next week, man, oh man, that'll be possibly the start of it. We're all looking forward to that. So, Mike, great having you on the show. Thank you, as always, for taking time on this weekend show, and we will chat again in another couple weeks. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Same to you guys.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.